We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Lindsay Patterson alongside Tyler Dragon, the Bengals beat writer for the Inquirer, and Charlie Goldsmith. You can find their work on Cincinnati.com. How are you guys doing?
I'm going to continue to say every week, I believe I'm doing better than the Bengals because my record is not 1-5-1. But yeah, I think I'm doing okay. How are you two doing?
I'm doing well as well. Also likely doing better than the Bengals, even though I feel like after the game yesterday, they weren't as depressed as you would expect. They felt more, you know, inspired or motivated to respond after that loss than some of the other ones.
I agree with you. I think the vibe, just listening to the post-game press conferences and even my mentions on social media, I don't think it was that bad for a lot of people, even though the way they lost is just heartbreaking for their defense.
Yeah, you know, there are several reasons to be optimistic, and I know we're getting on them during the podcast. But yeah, to lose a close game like that, that is heartbreaking. But there were several positive moments, mostly on the offensive side of the football and Joe Burrow. And we also have to keep in mind that that offense that, you know, put up 34 points on Sunday was without arguably their best player in Joe Mixon. So there was some positive takeaways to, look at that game. But like Joe Burrow said, it's about W's and L's, and the Bengals suffered yet another L.
I think one thing that we have to focus on right now is kind of, you want to talk about the internal stuff, but the external, you know, just in the last week with Carlos Dunlap, I know that he's been frustrated. We've heard him on Zooms a couple times get a little aggravated with his role. And then Saturday morning happened, you know, you wake up, you open social media, and then there's the Bengals depth chart. Not only is it on Instagram, everyone's going to take a screenshot. It's going to go on Twitter. It's just going to make its way, and it went viral. And then after the game, you hear that he might have been upset yelling at one of the D-line coaches. And then he puts his house up for sale. I will say now, as we're recording this on a Monday, everything has been deleted from his Instagram. But, you know, you can't delete things from social media because everyone already had a picture of it. So we're dealing with that right now. And it's unfortunate because win or lose, when you're talking to players after the game, Tyler Boyd, Gio Bernard, Joe Burrow, Zach Taylor as a head coach, and you're talking about the game, it wasn't about the game yesterday because we had to bring up what's going on with Carlos Dunlap. And Zach Taylor has said it a couple times, they're going to handle that in-house. But AJ Green, Tyler Boyd, Gio Bernard, and I respect them, they spoke about it. And you could tell the frustration from Tyler Boyd, who's been a leader in the locker room for a really long time, who didn't agree with what was kind of happening on the sideline with Carlos Dunlap. I thought the 10-15 minutes we had with Gio Bernard after the game was some of the most honest perspective that we've heard from a player, and we'll play some of it on this podcast. But I really respect Gio after hearing what he said. You know, those guys pretty much said, we go to work, we're here to win, we're here to do whatever we can to win. That other stuff, that's not for us. You know, this is about the people who want to be here right now. And we talked all last week about maybe a locker room that could be lost. And I don't know if I feel that way anymore after hearing some of the guys talk after the game, despite what's going on with Carlos Dunlap.
Well, hold on. You know I'm not a frequent Instagram user. Did Carlos Dunlap delete his Instagram or did he delete those posts?
He deleted the post.
Okay. Oh, so, well, you know, I still want to, you know, try to get bids on his house because that house, you know, looked, well, it seems to be really good. But to answer your question, you know, you never want to voice out your frustration publicly. And I'm on the side, I can see both sides, let me say that first. But if I had a problem with, you know, my role, my playing time, the position I'm playing, I'm going to handle that in-house. And I think Carlos Dunlap should have done that. You know, he has voiced his frustration to social media, to us reporters, and we all get that, you know, he's frustrated and he's let that be known. But there are, you know, more appropriate ways, and, you know, I'll even say more mature ways to handle, you know, the situation. Now, he definitely should not have had, you know, a verbal altercation on the sideline when they're in a contentious battle versus the Cleveland Browns on Sunday. That should not have happened, even if you're just playing 12 snaps. You can, you know, have that outburst inside the locker room or in the coach's room, in the coach's office after the game, or even the day after the game. I think those are more effective methods to get your point across. But, I mean, it's pretty much obvious that, you know, Dunlap and the Bengals, they, you know, are in a rift, and, you know, Dunlap is disgruntled, and he and the Bengals, I think, want to part ways. And, you know, one question is if, you know, there are going to be any takers, because Carlos still has, you know, a lot of money still remaining on this contract. So then you have to ask, you know, hope for a team to be willing to take on his contract. But, you know, it seems likely to me that Carlos Dunlap and the Bengals days, they're going to be numbered. Now, if he's not traded by the November 3rd deadline, then I would be shocked if he is a Bengal this offseason. And I would be shocked if the team does not release him by the June 3rd deadline. And that's all I'll say.
So during Zach Taylor's press conference today, Dave Lapham asked him a question completely unrelated to Carlos Dunlap. He asked Zach Taylor to analyze how Baker Mayfield was able to carve up the Bengals defense the way he did and what went wrong defensively. And when Zach Taylor came to his conclusion, he said this: there were some opportunities where maybe there should have been sacks or throwaways where they turned into big gains, 20 or 30 yard explosive gains. He continued, let's get our eyes in the backfield and get ready to go. So much of the root of the Bengals' struggles on defense right now is their ineffective pass rush. And nobody probably in the history of the franchise has been a better pass rusher than Carlos Dunlap was during his best moments in Cincinnati. Of course, he's so close to the franchise sack record. There's a reason that that has been the case. So it is that even much more shocking that in a moment where one of the biggest reasons the Bengals are 1-5-1, one of the biggest reasons that Lou Anarumo is, his job has been questioned on social media. It was questioned to Zach Taylor today in his press conference. And one of the biggest reasons that the Bengals aren't winning, you know, haven't won much this season is because of the pass rush. And Carlos Dunlap hasn't been a part of the solution, especially yesterday. You have to think if he were playing, if he were making more plays in the backfield, that would naturally lead to more snaps. It would be very hard for Zach Taylor to look his players in the eyes and say, we are not playing someone who could get 5 sacks in a game or something like that. You know what I'm saying? All solutions go back to contributions on the field, in my opinion. And that's not happening right now. Carlos Dunlap has been quiet in the stat sheet for the past few weeks, and he only played 11 plays yesterday, and I didn't notice him much at all. It's hard to see. Tyler mentioned what the long-term solution might be for Carlos Dunlap, but it's hard to see even a short-term solution that leads to him getting more playing time if he doesn't start contributing more in the snaps that he has.
I'll say this again. When a player wants traded and a team wants to trade him, you got to have two people involved. Here's the thing about Cincinnati. You hear it from national media, maybe the price is too high, what they want to get for him, and no one wants to pick up that contract. I'll say this on Monday, and look, things could change, and I'd be really surprised. I don't see the Cincinnati Bengals cutting him this season. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, you need to get him out of the locker room. That's bad vibes. It's just not going to work. You can already see the disconnect. That's not going to happen. Cincinnati does not cut people. They don't get their way. And it might not be right or wrong, but unless they can find a really good trade partner, Carlos Dunlap's probably going to be on this roster the rest of the season. Is it right? Probably not. They probably don't need the bad vibe. I don't know if you can fix what's happening right now. You could delete it from your social media, but the frustration we're seeing and we're hearing from players, and you can really see them kind of being like, hey, we want to focus on wins, but we have another part of us who, you know, we know Carlos. Carlos has been a part of this organization pretty much the longest, him and Geno Atkins in the locker room right now. If somebody would have told me prior to the season, or even Carlos Dunlap's last days in Cincinnati, if this is going to be how it was going to end, I would have said, no, you had the wrong guy. You had the wrong guy, because everybody knows what Carlos Dunlap has done for the city on and off the field, the things he does, his foundation. Carlos Dunlap is a really good dude. And for it to really go out like this, and if his days are numbered in Cincinnati, it's just unfortunate, because I hate to see this for Carlos as a person and Carlos as a player right now.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, the team can save $11.25 million. I have the numbers in front of me. If they release Dunlap before the June deadline. So I think that is the most likely outcome in this situation. The second most likely is they trade him before the November 3rd deadline. However, I don't see them getting a trade partner at this point in time. But, you know, there's still, you know, what, we have about a week left before the trade deadline. So there's still time. But, you know, I think the most likely outcome is the team releases him before that June deadline so they can save upwards of $11 million.
And it's funny to me that those decisions wait so long in the NFL calendar. That those just don't happen, say, at the start of the league new year or the day that the regular season ends. We've been talking about Carlos Dunlap at the top of this podcast a lot over the last few weeks. And I'm sure the Bengals are hoping that this doesn't drag out and continue to escalate every week the way that it has. Remember, this all started with, we were talking about whether or not Dunlap was a better run defender than Carl Lawson. That was the root of a lot of this. Then we were talking about Carlos Dunlap's conversation with the media a few weeks ago after he announced on his own that his role had declined on the team. And we led the podcast talking about Dunlap after his Instagram Live. Then this weekend, he had posting the depth chart on social media and what we've discussed that happened yesterday. Especially because this process could take a while to get Dunlap off the team, as Tyler meant, or to part ways with Dunlap, if that's what the Bengals want to do, like Tyler mentioned. You have to wonder if this will continue to escalate, how much more can even escalate? Because this has been the story of the Bengals for the past at least week, 2 weeks.
And we'll talk about Geno Atkins, who's also been here for 11 years. The Bengals no longer listed as a shoulder injury for Geno, and he was out there on Sunday, but you wouldn't know it when you look at the stat sheet, because Tyler Boyd had one more tackle than Geno, because he had one, and Geno had zero. So what's going on with Geno Atkins? I mean, is it still the shoulder thing, or is there more to it, and it's just a similar Carlos Dunlap thing where just we don't hear from Geno. He doesn't talk, so we don't know, and we can't hear his frustrations.
So I think it's a combination of both. And I kind of said this in my story last week. I do believe that Geno Atkins' shoulder is still bothering him. And I also think he is playing out of position. Geno Atkins is more of a three technique defensive tackle, and that is lining up on the outside shoulder of a guard, for those who don't know. And then the one technique, which he has been lining up in, is pretty much essentially a nose tackle. And that's lining up either directly above the center or on the inside shoulder of the guard. Now, to answer your question, I just think it's a little bit of both. He's not really listed on the injury report anymore, but his shoulder is still bugging him. And you know, he's just playing out of position, and the Bengals are going a little bit younger with their, you know, defensive line rotation. Now, they still think that Geno can, you know, be effective in those third down situations, and that's what they are going to utilize him as going forward. I don't see him, unfortunately, I don't see him playing, you know, 40 plus snaps at all this season. I think he is going to play, you know, a similar role through the rest of the season and play those, you know, 20 snaps per game, an average or so. And it's because his shoulder is bugging him and the Bengals kind of want to, you know, see what they have in their younger talent. And, you know, he's kind of playing out of position. They want him as a one technique, and he's pretty much more accustomed to a three technique. So it's a combination of both.
So last season, the Bengals had the worst run defense in the NFL. And in a lot of ways, I feel like every decision the Bengals have made along the defensive line, and even at linebacker, have tied back to trying to fix the run defense. Starting off with, as I mentioned earlier, Carlos Dunlap being replaced by Carl Lawson in the starting lineup. When asked why the decision was made, Dunlap said he got the idea that it was because of his ability as a run stopper. Then the next way that escalated with Dunlap in the rotation-wise was he was replaced in the starting lineup by Amani Bledsoe after Sam Hubbard got put on IR. Amani Bledsoe is a guy that defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo said is a run stopper. That's been how it's operated on defensive end, and I think it's operating very similarly at defensive tackle. You look at the guy they got off the street and are now starting, Xavier Williams. Literally the first sentence he said to the media as a member of the Bengals is, "I'm a run stopper." You look at Marcus Hunt. That's a guy who can provide a lot of those elements as well, even though he's not the same size as a guy like Xavier Williams. They even give Khalil McKenzie a shot, someone who had not been a defensive tackle at all in his NFL career, even though it was his native position, someone who has moved to offensive guard. They gave him a shot to be a run stopper, and they gave him, when he was active, more snaps than Geno Atkins.
All right. Well,
so cool. So now on Atkins, he isn't, or Zach Taylor said he's most comfortable right now pass rushing on third downs. The coaching staff is not putting him in positions to be on the field in those run stopping plays. And you have to think that ties back to that same track record, that same thinking that they've been using all season.
We'll flip sides right now, because what if I told you, going against one of the best D-lines, you have Myles Garrett on the other side, the Cincinnati Bengals team was going to play pretty much a half of football without Jonah Williams, Trey Hopkins. They were going to lose Bobby Hart late, and some people might say that doesn't matter. Well, Bobby Hart's actually been playing okay right now at right tackle. He had the highest PFF grade after Sunday. You're going to have all those backups in there. You're going to put up 34 points, and you're still going to lose the game. I think when you look at this offensive line, and look, I thought Fred Johnson did okay at left tackle for Jonah Williams. He's not your left tackle. Jonah Williams is, and unfortunately, they might be without Jonah Williams for a little while, and they hope to get him back after the bye, but we'll have more on that this week. Are you guys surprised with how this offensive line played in the second half of the game?
Yeah, you know, to have your left tackle go down to a neck injury, then your center be concussed, and then, you know, late in the game, Bobby Hart suffers an injury, your right tackle. It's, I have never been a part of a game covering where your three of your five starting offensive linemen all go down to injury and are all ruled out because of injury. You know, Fred Johnson did okay. He did give up a sack to Myles Garrett, but who doesn't at this point? Garrett is one of the leading candidates for Defense Player of the Year. Billy Price, I thought, did well for his time there at center. And Hakeem Adeniji filled in at that right tackle spot for, you know, a limited amount of time. And he did okay. So, you know, the Bengals, they might have to go forward with, you know, those guys, because Zach Taylor did say today during his Monday press conference that Jonah Williams is day-to-day, and Trey Hopkins is in concussion protocol, and then Bobby Hart is for sure going to miss week 8. So if that's the situation and Jonah Williams is day-to-day, then, you know, you might have Fred Johnson getting his first start of the season at left tackle. And you might have Billy Price getting his first start of the season and returning to that center position. He's a first-round pick, so he is motivated to prove that he's still a starting caliber offensive lineman in this league. And, you know, it could be the big opportunity for rookie Akeem Adeniji to get his first start. Now, also, I know NFL Network reported it first, but I did hear, source did tell me that Quentin Spain is visiting the team this week. He's more comfortable playing left guard, but he has taken snaps in his career at right guard. But yes, he's visiting the team this week. And if all goes well with his visit, the expectation is that the two sides will reach an agreement and then he'll sign with the Bengals.
So it's funny. I tweeted out earlier what the Bengals starting offensive line could be this week. And it's some really interesting names. Remember in the offseason when one of the most common criticisms of the Bengals front office was not being more aggressive, bolstering the offensive line, all of the names that the Bengals didn't pursue. And a common reason that when the Bengals front office and coaching staff explained they didn't make even more changes, common reasons for those were the belief they had in Fred Johnson and Akeem Adeniji. Those were two guys whose upside they really touted in the offseason. Johnson, after having a strong close to last season, Adeniji having really earned the coach's trust in the pre-draft process. Those guys, probably more than anyone else on the roster, are the reason the Bengals didn't add another veteran backup to the offensive line and rolled with the players they have. So now that decision is being tested. We are about to see whether or not that was a smart move to roll into the season with Fred Johnson as your primary backup tackle, with Akeem Adeniji as your sixth, seventh, or eighth swing guy between guard and tackle. We're about to see whether or not that decision paid off, and we're about to see whether or not the Bengals should have not just added more to the starters on the offensive line, but should have done more, been more aggressive in bolstering the back end of that room as well.
When you look at the guard play and look, and I think that's one thing you can really point out, besides the last 2 weeks, the offensive line has looked okay. And we talked to Trey Hopkins last week and he talked about some of the chemistry. If Quentin Spain works out as guard, you put Xavier back out there and Michael Jordan as a backup, because Michael Jordan's playing a little bit better than what he was playing in the first couple weeks of football. If this team focuses on that guard play to the offensive line, you have Jonah Williams returning at left tackle, Trey Hopkins at center, obviously. Could this team deal with having Bobby Hart at right tackle going into 2021?
Well, you know the answer fans will say. Watching tape, Bobby Hart is playing a lot better than he played last year. And I think he is improving as a right tackle. I don't see the team's biggest weaknesses on the offensive line at either of the tackle spots. I think right now it's been guard play for the Bengals right now in the interior. Jonah Williams has been steady, probably the best offensive lineman. I think Bobby Hart has probably been the third. I mean, Charlie plays that, you know, ranked the Bengals offensive lineman. Bobby Hart and Trey Hopkins are neck and neck, in my opinion, as 2 and 3 as the Bengals' best offensive linemen. So, you know, if you can get a free agent right tackle that is obviously better than Bobby Hart, then you can think about switching it up. But, you know, I see Bobby Hart, you know, remaining starter at that right tackle spot, unless Hakeem Adeniji gets to start this week and just knocks everybody's socks off and, you know, puts great snaps on tape so the Bengals can feel as comfortable moving forward with him. But I still see Bobby Hart as their best option at right tackle.
I do think it's important to add a little context. Bobby Hart is scheduled to make $6.9 million last year, which would make him one of the highest paid members on all of the highest paid players on the entire Bengals roster. While I don't think that his production matches that salary or has matched that salary with his performance this year, I do agree with Tyler that there are considerably bigger needs on the roster. It's a fun thought exercise. Imagine the Bengals get like the fifth pick. Who do they take? You know, the odds are, you know, AJ Green's heading into a contract year. Carl Lawson is on a contract year. Will Jackson is on a contract year. Those are three positions that the Bengals could, if they don't re-sign those guys, be in a major need of high-end talent at either cornerback, defensive end, or wide receiver. And then, of course, offensive line is the position that we've been talking about all season as this team's biggest weakness. I think the Bengals do have to get better on the offensive line, and I don't think that someone like Quentin Spain is enough there, especially considering the importance that Joe Burrow has in his franchise and the ability to build around him while he's on this rookie contract.
We're at the middle of the season right now. You look at the AFC North, this team is not going to the playoffs. I'm not breaking any news right now. They're just trying to win a game. And even Joe Burrow said that last week. They take it week by week, just winning a football game and learning how to finish. But speaking of Joe Burrow, I mean, I could sound like a broken record, but if you wanted to talk about some positives, just the way he's playing after seven games yesterday, the only rookie quarterback in NFL history with 400 yards plus passing yards, three passing TDs and a rushing TD in a single game. He's about to shatter Andrew Luck's record when he was a rookie. So the way that Joe Burrow is playing and with the pieces he has, I think he has the weapons. We've talked about the wide receiver group to be determined on what happens with AJ Green in 2021. But you look at guys like T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, and even in the tight end room, the way they're using Drew Sample right now, Joe Burrow's play, have you guys just been impressed week by week how he just keeps getting better?
Hold on, Lindsay, you already shut the door on the playoffs?
Yeah, they weren't going to the playoffs after week three.
I mean, can't believe Miss Optimistic shut the door on the playoffs already.
We knew before the season started this team was not going to the postseason. This season was about development, and now it's just about keeping Joe Burrow on his feet, and they've done an okay job with that the last couple weeks. Defensively they have some issues, but This team isn't going to the playoffs. It's really just what you have, and we've talked about it with Joe Burrow, what he's showing out there. That's some optimism when you look at the future for the Cincinnati Bengals at the quarterback position, obviously.
Yeah, I was just messing with you. You know, I know you're misoptimistic, so it surprised me that you said this team is not going to the playoffs already. No. But yeah, Joe Burrow, what can I say? He is a leading candidate for NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year. Like you said, he's the first rookie to throw for 400 plus yards, have three passing touchdowns and a rushing TD in the game. He's has five games of over 300 yards passing. One more game will tie Andrew Luck as for the most in NFL history for a rookie quarterback. So he's on pace to, you know, shatter that record. Yeah, he's been as advertised, like I always say, the best rookie quarterback coming out of this year's draft. And now that's saying a lot because Justin Herbert with the LA Chargers looks really good. And, you know, Tua's going to get an opportunity to play for the rest of the season in Miami. So he's going to have some competition, but Burrow has been noticeably better than, you know, well, at least Justin Herbert right now. And we'll see what happens with Tua Tagovailoa. But yeah, the Bengals, they have to feel good about the quarterback that they drafted number one overall. He has proven through seven games that they made the right decision and that they can build around him. Now, the question is, can they protect him? They have to do a better job protecting Joe Burrow. Now, some of the blame is on Joe Burrow. rookie quarterbacks tend to watch a play develop and hold the football for a little bit longer than quarterbacks who have been in the NFL for a few years. So Joe Burrow's already been sacked 28 times. That's tied for the most in all of football, and he's been hit more than any other quarterback in the NFL. So that number needs to go down tremendously because you want to protect your franchise quarterback. And also, you want to have a more balanced offense. Joe Burrow leads the NFL in pass attempts, and he leads the NFL in completions. And so, I mean, leading the NFL in completions is cool, but, I mean, that's because he's thrown more than anybody else in the league. So you want to have, you know, run the ball a little bit more, or even without Joe Mixon, you want to manufacture runs, have some more reverses, you know, maybe some have some more screens. You know, try to use also those young running backs, Travion Williams. He didn't get a carry yesterday. You know, Shamaje Perine was barely involved in the run game. Giovanni Bernard's not really known to be a running back that you can hand the ball off to 20 times a game, but you know, you can utilize him on some of those outside and stretch runs and sweeps. So they need to diversify the offense a little bit more, even if Joe Mixon is out. But once Joe Mixon is back in, find out ways to use him a little bit more, get the running backs more involved to protect Joe Burrow a little bit more, because he cannot continue to drop back 40, 50, 60 times a game. You want to have a more balanced attack than you have, because Joe Burrow's getting hit and hit a lot. Some of those hits yesterday, even the non-sacks, were big, and those start to take a toll on the human body once you accumulate those over time.
Joe Burrow is ready to win now, and I don't think that's even up for debate. If he had been dropped into a better team with more surrounding talent, I think that Joe Burrow is ready to win playoff games. Just look even at the games that he's played, playing with an offensive line that we've discussed and playing opposite a defense that has its own injuries and issues that we've discussed at length as well. Joe Burrow played well enough to win against the Chargers, played well enough to win against the Eagles. He beat the Jaguars. He led the Bengals to a 21-0 lead against Indianapolis. And he had the best game of his career against Cleveland. Again, the Bengals were good enough to win against a team that's probably going to make the playoffs this year. You have to wonder why the Bengals are in a situation where they don't have as much surrounding talent with Burrow, especially because the Bengals have never gone into a season intending to tank, like, say, the Jets did this year. Last year, the Bengals weren't setting out to be a two-win team like the Dolphins. They kind of ended up there at the end of the way. And because they've added free agents, just like, you know, Preston Brown and B.W. Webb and John Miller and Chris Baker, those are the guys who they've added in free agency in the 2 years before this one. You can add Trey Waynes and D.J. Reader and Von Bell in one offseason, which were tremendous moves that have helped the defense when they've been healthy. But there's just not enough there behind them to withstand injuries. It's not a deep enough roster, especially considering how this franchise is drafted recently as well. Joe Burrow is ready to win now, but the Bengals aren't.
No, that's a really good point, Charlie. And I think there's a lot of plays you can look on and some of his mistakes, but some of the positives from Joe Burrow. Even yesterday, he had two plays that really stand out to me. It was the 3rd and 11, almost 2 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and he runs for the first down. And you could just see his attitude, and he just points for the first down. And even Gio Bernard talked about it. He said, when we're in a huddle, we feel like we're going to win with this guy. And then, of course, the pass to Tyler Boyd. I mean, there's just some things that he does and he realizes, and some rookie mistakes out there. We see that with some of his interceptions. But there were so many plays yesterday that he looked like a veteran to me.
Yeah, he's a one thing that really sticks out in my eyes is when I watch Joe Burrow play, and then when I go back and look at the tape, it's the pass catchers that are getting involved. And, you know, that tells me that he is scanning the field well and he is reading defenses and he's not keying in on receivers too often. If his first read isn't open, he's quick to go to his second, third, and, you know, fourth option. And seven different Bengals caught passes yesterday. So that's a testament to his ability to be able to read defenses, diagnose the defense that is, you know, against him and finding the open man. And that's pretty much, you know, usually quarterbacks take a long time to develop that. And when you see rookie quarterbacks and first year quarterbacks in the league, they tend to key in on their targets, especially if you have, you know, AJ Green or a target like Tyler Boyd. They'll key into their number one and number two options and just force feed them, even if they're not open. But Joe Burrow, there are a lot of times where he won't see, okay, AJ Green is not open this play. So, you know, I might throw to Drew Sample, or maybe Tyler Boyd's open in the slot, or wait, T. Higgins, the third option, could be available, or might check it down to Geo. So he's done a great job these first seven games with his ability to be able to read defenses and find the open man and spreading the ball around and not just keying in on one target.
They didn't come out and say it yesterday, but I got the very big impression listening to guys like Gio Bernard, AJ Green, Joe Burrow post game, that the last fourth and one play from the 3 yard line that ended up as what should have been the Bengals game winning touchdown, it sounded like that was Burrow making read at the line of scrimmage. From what it sounded like, Burrow could have opted for the sneak, or he could have called the audible, which he did, for the bootleg pass to Giovanni Bernard coming out in motion on the right side. To make that good of a read in that pivotal of a moment in your seventh NFL game. Now that says something about the guy. I said it earlier, Joe Burrow is ready to win now, and he led the Bengals on a game-winning drive yesterday, game-winning touchdown drive. The rest just didn't come out in the Bengals' favor.
I think when a team loses, you overlook some of the positives, and we've talked a lot about the offense right now. I think Gio Bernard, and he had to step up with Joe Mixon sideline right now to be determined when Joe Mixon gets back out there. I think Gio Bernard, from the runs to the blocks, was one of the most underrated pieces for the offense yesterday.
Wait, his what? His run blocking?
Yeah, I thought he was one of the most underrated pieces for the offense yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I meant pass block. Yeah, you know, he was very involved in the pass game. I liked the short passes that he had, especially that one long run that he had in short pass. You know, he is obviously an asset in the pass game. Now, the team still obviously missed Joe Mixon yesterday because they really couldn't get anything going running the ball. I think Gio had 37 yards rushing and Joe Burrow had 34. So they basically rushed for the same amount of yards. But, you know, why they gave Gio an extension last year is because, you know, one, he's a leader in the locker room. You know, he does everything that he's asked. He does his job well. And, you know, what he does for the Bengals offensively, especially in that pass game, he's a change of pace back when you Joe Mixon needs a breather, and also a third down specialist on offense. We say that in defense, but he's a third down specialist too on offense, especially in passing situations. So I did think he had, you know, a good game yesterday. With those five catches and 59 receiving yards and a touchdown.
It's funny. I was thinking about Giovanni Bernard and how him and Carlos Dunlap are both third down specialists at this point of their career. Yet how Giovanni Bernard has continued, is now arguably playing the best football he has played at any point during Zach Taylor's coaching tenure. The Bengals kind of had to change their offense yesterday because they couldn't work in those power runs that they constantly call up for Joe Mixon. Yet the result was Giovanni Bernard scrapping, Giovanni Bernard making incredible pass blocks, going up against guys like Myles Garrett, guys who are twice his size, and Giovanni Bernard being called on to make what should have been the game-winning catch as well. This is someone who hasn't really been the starting, or who literally hasn't started a game at running back since, I think, September of 2018, who came in yesterday when one of the team's very best players is hurt. and who, because he is in the game plan kind of has to change around the team and around him being there. Someone who knew his role and played a pivotal game, I'd say behind probably Joe Burrow and Tyler Boyd and AJ Green. I think Giovanni Bernard probably had the fourth best game on the team, which is something because he had not been high at all on the pecking order before Sunday.
I will say this, if Joe Mixon would have played yesterday, Joe Burrow is not throwing that first quarter red zone interception. Joe Mixon's running that one right in. But other playmakers we saw out there, and it's actually 2 weeks in a row for this guy. This offense has clicked for 2 weeks. AJ Green has looked like the old AJ Green. Is that the connection there right now? Is that why this offense is really vibing?
So I have high expectations for AJ Green. I'll say he's looked a lot better. I won't say he's looked like the old AJ Green. I won't go that far because I think the old AJ Green is easily a top five receiver in the NFL. I don't think over the, even the last 2 weeks, AJ Green has been a top five receiver in the National Football League. But with all that being said, I'm still going to be optimistic and I'm still going to be encouraging. 15 catches for what, 178 yards the last 2 weeks. Those are way better numbers than what we've seen to begin the season. And you can tell and you can see it on the field that his chemistry with Joe Burrow is developing. Now, there was one play where there was some miscommunication and it almost was a costly mistake by both of them where, you know, Joe Burrow almost threw an interception because AJ Green and him got, you know, confused of the coverage that was aligned against them. But, you know, for the most part, I like what I'm seeing for the last, you know, couple weeks. I think he had two third down catches in the loss yesterday. So that was good. He had a lot of big catches in Indianapolis in week six. So hopefully they can continue to build on their performances. And I know AJ Green and Joe Burrow both said that they want to build on the momentum that they have, you know, developed together. He said he's feeling like the old AJ health-wise, and it is beginning to show on the field, and the Bengals need that because Zach Taylor said it, and it's, I mean, it's pretty obvious, you know, despite the Bengals' record, AJ Green, Tyler Boyd, and T. Higgins, they are developing into a pretty nice 1-2-3 punch. And, you know, Joe Burrow, there's a reason why he has, you know, all these 300-yard passing games. And yesterday he had a threw for over 400 yards. Is because the Bengals receivers, they are some of the best in the National Football League as a group. And easily, I think, the best in the division, especially those three, and then with Odell Beckham going down with a season-ending knee injury, the Bengals easily, in my opinion, have the best receiving depth chart in the AFC North. And I expect them to continuing to get better, especially Burrow and AJ Green and their connection.
Paul Daugherty had a great line in the morning line today. He said that AJ Green has become a singles hitter instead of a home run hitter. Early in AJ's career, it was the deep ball, the game winner against Baltimore. There was a memorable halftime catch against the Cleveland Browns in, I think, 2015, where AJ's on one foot and he bobbles the ball from his left hand to his right hand, pulls it in. That's what AJ Green was known for. In 2020, AJ Green's known for catching a slant or for running around into the middle of the field, stopping, finding space, reeling in a 10-yard catch. And that's something the Bengals really need right now. Yes, they do need a deep threat. That's one of the biggest things this offense is missing. But it sure helps to have AJ Green. He's playing a larger share of the snaps. He's providing, really finding a very different role in an offense where he's almost the co-number one receiver with Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins. The wide receivers are playing very well. And that's not the reason the Bengals aren't having success.
Plenty to work on offensively and defensively for this team. We'll get into prediction preview for week 8 when the Cincinnati Bengals take on the Tennessee Titans later this week. You guys have plenty on Cincinnati.com as the Bengals world turns because it feels like a soap opera some weeks. What's up there on Cincinnati.com?
Okay, before I answer this question, I do have another question for you guys after, and I think you know where I'm going with this.
I know where you're going.
So what's on Cincinnati.com? I have a story on the incident with Carlos Dunlap and members of the defensive coaching staff yesterday on the sideline. It's obvious that Dunlap is frustrated. I think the team is frustrated with how he is acting at this point, especially the coaching staff. Quinton Spain, as I alluded to earlier, he is visiting this week. If all goes well, he will be signing with the Cincinnati Bengals. I have a story on that. And if you missed yesterday's game, or if you want to just know what went wrong, why it went wrong, and how it could get better, I have what we learned also from the 37-34 loss to the Cleveland Browns.
I have a story up on Cincinnati.com on the reaction to last night's game from the team and from people like Joe Burrow and Zach Taylor. And check out later this week, I'll have a story online on Giovanni Bernard, some of what we spoke about on this podcast today.
What do you want, Tyler?
I felt some hostility coming from your end with that question. It's
prediction time, and I'm just ready for it.
Yeah, it's always prediction time. Well, first I have a curveball prediction. Well, actually, should I do my curveball prediction? Yeah, okay, I'll do my curveball prediction first. Who do you two have winning the World Series after last night's game?
Tampa. It's title town in Tampa.
I hope Tampa.
How many games? Well, it has to go seven now, correct? Yeah, because
yes.
Yeah, it has to go seven. So you have Tampa in seven. Charlie, what do you have?
While I want Tampa Bay to win, while I think guys like Azarena, even Brett Phillips, are some of the most fun baseball players, are having one of the most fun World Series I've seen in my lifetime. The Dodgers are up 3-2. That's huge. I'll take the Dodgers in seven. And shout out to Clayton Kershaw, who had a kind of career-defining game last night.
Okay. He needed that.
So both of you have Tampa Bay.
I picked the Dodgers.
Oh, okay. You picked the Dodgers.
We want Tampa.
You want Tampa.
The Dodgers will be in seven.
Okay. So that's the baseball prediction. Now, my other prediction is, based on what you know, what you've seen in this NFL season, the Bengals still have three NFC East opponents remaining. The Washington football team, the New York Giants, and the Dallas Cowboys. How many games do you see the Bengals winning versus those three teams? Now, do you see them winning all three of those games? Do you see them winning one of the three games? Do you see them winning two of the three games?
I'll go, and I definitely think they beat the Cowboys.
Think they beat the Cowboys.
Oh, yeah, the Cowboys might be second to worst team in the NFL right now, and I know the Jags and the Jets aren't very good when talking about the worst teams in the NFL, but I'll probably say they beat the Cowboys and they beat the Giants in a close one.
Okay, so you have them winning two of those three games and losing to the Washington football team.
Yes.
Okay, Charlie, you.
I have the exact same scenario. I think it's important to remember that the Bengals, once they get past the bye week in Pittsburgh, their schedule just gets incredibly easier. They play those three NFC East teams with, I think, a game against the Miami Dolphins mixed in there. Yes. I think the Bengals win two of the three. But if they don't win two of the three, then I think we learn more about the surrounding overall team than we've learned at all this previously this season, because the Bengals are playing much better teams right now. If they still have these same issues against those teams, I think this conversation starts to shift.
Okay. And then my last but not least, the question is Andy Dalton the starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys when Dallas travels to Cincinnati on December 13th to take on the Bengals?
Yes, I do. I know he's dealing with that hit from yesterday, which the hit should have been the suspension. And I do think he's the quarterback when he plays the Bengals. Yep.
The only way I think he doesn't start is if this injury forces him to miss 2 or 3 weeks, at which point I could see Dallas making a reactionary move at the trade deadline. If it's just a 1-week injury, I think they rolled with the quarterback from James Madison, DiNucci. Good for him for getting an NFL start. And I don't know the injury severity for Andy Dalton, but I would expect, just based off what I've read, that he's not going to miss too long. So I think we'll see him in Cincinnati.
I'll just say this. I hope they take two of three in the NFC East, because the last thing we need is for this team to get the second pick overall and us be dealing with, or even the first pick, say the Jets put some wins together, which I don't see happening. We don't need this team getting the number one pick, because I don't want to deal with these quarterback questions. They got Joe Burrow. I don't want to hear the Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields stuff. I mean, they might get bank. They might get bank when it comes to trading out of that pick. But I don't even want to deal with the NFL draft discussion right now. So, yeah, they better take two of three when it comes to the NFC East. But that's to be determined.
Okay. Well, prediction time with Tyler Dragon's over.
Prediction time is over. Plenty on Cincinnati.com. I was joking with someone who also covers the Cincinnati Bengals, and I said it's probably going to be a quiet week in Cincinnati. So you know what that means. It's not going to be a quiet week. Make sure you stay on Cincinnati.com. Follow us over on Twitter, ENQ Sports, over on the Instagram, ENQ Bengals. We'll have a prediction preview for Week 8 versus the Titans coming up later this week. Thank you for listening to the Bengals Beat Podcast.